raise the processing line speeds at Tyson?
Yeah. I mean, this issue has, workers have been battling this issue for so long. Right now, workers used to process 145 chickens per minute. That led to a long life injuries to workers.
We have five seconds.
So right now the workers are more in danger by this line speed increase, and so as well as the consumers.
We want to thank you for being with us, and of course, we will revisit this issue. Magali Lekola, Executive Director of Venceremos, the advocacy group for poultry plant workers. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Working with as few people as possible on site. The majority of our amazing team is working from home, and we thank each and every one of you. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Good morning, Portland. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7, 104.3 in Philomath, and Hood River on 91.9 FM. Here's your weather for this morning, and of course, coming up is more talk radio with Abe and Joe. You'll notice more clouds rolling in from the north today. Tomorrow, a cooler onshore flow will transport a layer of clouds to the valleys and coastline. Drizzle is possible in spots along the coast. Clouds will clear into the afternoon with highs reaching the low to mid-60s. The weather pattern will be brief. An offshore flow on Thursday and Friday will warm our area back to the low mid-70s. Still no rain in the forecast through Sunday. And now, listen back to KBOO here on 90.7 Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, KBOO will be sticking to our regularly scheduled programming as much as possible, but there are some limitations that we're working with, so we appreciate your understanding and support. We are committed to keeping our staff, volunteers, and programmers safe and healthy, so we are transitioning to producing programs remotely. For updates on KBOO's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, visit our website at kboo.fm/COVID-19. That's kboo.fm/COVID-19.
KBOO.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
Welcome to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio, and now here are your hosts, Abe and Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm well. How are you, Joe?
Oh, I'm a little bit depressed, but well.
All right, so more or less normal then.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Abe and Joe Show in Exile. Once again, we are coming to you from our respective homes. And through the miracles of modern technology, here we are. Happy to be with you this morning.
Yeah, well, it really is amazing, actually, that this can work. And I'm really glad that this is happening.
So, Abe, I'm a bit flummoxed. A lot has gone on. We missed a whole week of, one program of our programming. And you said you had some stuff you really wanted to talk about. So I'm gonna give you the lead. Is that all right?
Okay, that's totally fine. We're going to depart from convention on the show this morning and address some listener feedback that came to us. This was with regard to the last time we were on the air. That was March the 31st. In particular, I want to read to you some excerpts from a post that placed on our Facebook page by a listener named Jill. I thought Jill's comments were quite astute. So what I want to do is I want to read a few excerpts from that, make a few observations, and then I would like to, after that, invite other listeners to comment. But at that point, we're also going to transition into, talking about the pandemic we got going on, and also the slow creep of the United States towards authoritarianism. So we got a lot to cover
fascism.
Today. So.
I want to call it fascism.
You can call it fascism, Joe.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to dive right in. Excuse me. This is from our listener, Jill. As a longtime listener and KBOO member, I was compelled to address some glaring issues with your comments on today's show. This was March the 31st. Please know that as with your program, I am so appreciative for all of KBOO's programs and the hard work and endless volunteer production hours. First, you both opined on the possibility of New York Governor Cuomo being the Democratic presidential candidate because of his stereotypical, outmoded male bravado. Yet neither of you commented on the calm, cool directness of Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who deftly responded to Trump's sexist remarks in a recent radio interview. This is Abe again talking. I have to say that's absolutely true. I saw Governor Cuomo on the TV speaking in a way that was so diametrically opposed to the way the president has been talking about the pandemic that he seemed to me to be a much more useful and acceptable model of leadership during this time. And the reason, as Joe goes on to point out, and we'll get to that in just a second, is because I believe that I fell into a trap, I think that a lot of people do, particularly dudes, particularly white dudes, and that is that our default condition, our default model for leadership is masculine. And we don't often make room to let other styles of leadership into the picture when we're discussing that sort of thing. So yes, absolutely. The governor of Michigan has also been providing the sort of leadership that is so lacking from the White House. And, I think that I, just speaking for me, should have been open to discussing her contributions on the air.
Well, and
so
I,
you're right.
Yeah, I want to agree with that. And I also want to point out, though, that there were several figures who stood out, the governor of California and the governor of Washington, and eventually Kate Brown here. I was not thinking about it in terms of machismo or anything like that. I was thinking about the concept of leadership related to Trump, who is, in my mind, a fascist.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with that. And I also think that unconsciously we often default to those traditional conceptions of the qualities a leader should have.
Right.
And
well,
in our culture, that has been, for a long time, male.
Yeah, born in the USA, as they say.
Yeah, precisely. All right, so back to Jill's comments. Moreover, your Cuomo remarks today were made without knowing that for years, many New Yorkers, including HBO's John Oliver on his recent show, have longstanding politically progressive criticisms of Cuomo. In addition, even if you aren't a New Yorker, it was national news that in the last two gubernatorial races, Cuomo had Democratic opponents to the left of him, and both were women. This is also true. Sometimes when you're hosting a talk show, in fact, pretty much all the time when you're hosting a talk show, you're faced with a unique challenge. And that is, you need to be able to speak intelligently, at least reasonably so, on a very wide range of topics. So in other words, you need to be sort of a mile wide and an inch deep, if that makes any sense. So yes, I should have been aware of these criticisms of Cuomo, and they are absolutely part of the larger context in which we were discussing him on the March 31st program. So again, listener Jill's comments, I think, are spot on in this case. All right, moving back to Jill's comments. Secondly, when a caller informed you both of a longstanding sexual harassment allegation against Joe Biden, which was reported on March 31st, Democracy Now!, that was the morning of the 31st, immediately preceding our show, you both basically said you couldn't comment without looking at the news reports. Why not? You spoke about Cuomo without really knowing about him, and then she adds that, yes, that was sarcasm. Yes, that's also very true. Both of us at the time, Joe and myself, expressed the fact that we were not familiar with the details of those allegations, that we had not heard the report on Democracy Now!, and that indeed we had not read in any detail the details around that story. Having done so, I think that those allegations are serious and that they are credible, and that I believe in a more perfect world, they would result in Joe Biden being unable to sustain his candidacy on the grounds that there were people lost widespread confidence for him. And I want to circle back to this in a moment, so please hold that in mind. She goes on to say, Jill does, to Joe, if you do read these comments, please re-listen to your show today, and you too, Abe, and pay special attention to your comment, and she's paraphrasing now, that probably every man back in the Mad Men era was sexist towards women. And then she adds, parenthetically, Abe, I have to say I didn't hear a big pushback from you. Thankfully, and much thanks to the truth-speaking KABU woman engineer who ran your show and brought this to your attention, Joe, that your statements were confirming a mindset of rape culture. Also, Joe, as the adage goes, you're never too old to learn something new about not perpetuating, excusing everyday sexism, which was as wrong then as it is now. Now, I want to come out, and I'm not going to speak for you, Joe, so feel free, please, to jump in right behind me on this.
Okay.
Speaking for myself, and I believe this is true of both of us, but I'll let you clarify, Joe. Neither of us was offering a defense of traditional rape culture, as our engineer called it, and I think characterized it accurately. But we're observing that Joe Biden is a product of that culture and grew up at a time when men were given a whole lot more room to do things which are now considered verboten. I'm not endorsing that. I'm not defending that in any way. What I was trying to get across in last week's show, or excuse me, on the March 31st show, is that Joe Biden is a product of this culture. Clearly, the vestiges of this culture need to pass away. We need to move on to a more enlightened state of affairs, and denouncing that sort of cultural permissiveness on the part of men is something that progressives, including talk radio hosts, probably especially talk radio hosts, need to denounce.
Yeah.
You want to add anything to that, Joe?
Yeah, I do. I really, as to the accusation of rape culture, I was actually personally quite offended. What I thought I was doing, and I thought I was clear in doing it, was discussing a historical reality, not approving of that reality. And the remark I made, I thought was quite clear, that during the period of time, and I would use a stereotype like ad men or something, during that period of time, it was very much a custom of machismo, which dominated the male culture, to be essentially sexist, and to be, as was also the case of racism, to be, I think, what we now must understand, and what in those days actually many of us were aware of, about the behavior of men, particularly white men. And I think this is a very important thing. What I thought I was doing was giving a historical perspective. By the way, I am still dubious, and I want to make this clear, about this accusation, because there is not, and I think this is very important, there is not a credible supporting witness, and there shouldn't have to be, but this is a change in the position of this woman. now having read all the material. And I'm very concerned, and I want to bring this in because I think it's real, that this will be one of the most nasty campaigns in American history, and we will be hearing a great deal of material out of Russia and other places, which will gain credibility by repetition rather than by factuality. And I think it's important to understand that. I am not dismissing the accusation. I simply don't know. I do know that the New York Times and several other publications could not find any corroboration of her report, not just in seeing the event, but in having her report it at the time. And I think that's really important.
Okay. So those were the points in listener Jill's comments that I wanted to address. And I want to go on and thank her for submitting those. It's good to hear criticism, I think, especially when it's warranted. And it's also nice to receive criticism that is so thoughtful and so well expressed. So thank you for that, Jill. And going forward, again, speaking for myself, I'm going to do my best to avoid stepping in those same sort of holes. So there you have it. Listeners, you're welcome to give us a call and talk about what we just went over if you like. But I would like to pivot now at this time, Joe, and talk about our slide into fascism. How about that for a happy topic?
Yeah, right. Moving from sexism or accusations of sexism, severe accusations of sexism, to fascism is an interesting pivot indeed. I am very much more worried right now in our historical situation about the rise of what I clearly believe is fascism on the part of the present administration. And it is not coincidental that the man who is president, not elected by the majority of the people, the man who is now president, bragged about precisely the kind of behavior that was being accused, that Biden was being accused of. And I think there's a certain irony in that. And I also I'm wholly suspicious. And here's the problem. There is a very strong feeling, and I understand that feeling, that women should be believed because so many have not been believed. But that sets up things in a way, in a political environment such as we have today, in a way that makes it very dangerous to be a male politician. You can easily be accused, and indeed, you could be guilty. There's no way, except for corroboration by witnesses or those who see something or something that was said, to corroborate this thing. And it leaves this situation absolutely unclear, and I am absolutely certain that this will be something used by a lot of other people. And I would note, because it's really important, that the decision by Bernie Sanders to support Biden was probably a decision that included awareness of this accusation, because I think his people are very aware of that. I'm not making a judgment on this because I can't. I truly can't. But it's a very serious accusation, and I would wonder at the change in the story and so on. But I don't want to get into an argument about whether or not this woman was attacked by Biden, because I have no way other than her recent assertion, contrary to her earlier stories, about it. I'm just real suspicious, and I have to be. As a journalist, I have to be.
Certainly. But I don't. I disagree with you in that we ought to pity the lot of the poor male politicians.
I don't pity
really,
him at all.
It's not... No, you said it's a very difficult time to be a male politician. Being a male politician is the very definition of privilege. And really, to avoid this sort of thing, all you need to do is not be an ass. Don't make unwanted advancements towards women. Don't touch people inappropriately or without consent. It's not difficult. It really isn't. And that's one of the reasons I feel that it does not strain credulity that Biden is reputedly quite handsy with women.
Oh, no, I know that's... I know that's true, and I think it's a very important criticism of him and of his behavior. And, of course, routinely he's apologized. Now, what that means, I don't know.
Yeah, what that means, I don't know either. But it also, in the era of the Me Too movement, and knowing all that we know now in 2020, about the historical treatment of women at the hands of men, particularly those in powerful positions. We're faced with a conundrum here as progressives, because, you know, really, in my mind, in a perfect world, the bulk of these allegations, you know, even the appearance of impropriety on the part of the person who's going to head what is nominally the Progressive Party in the United States, even the appearance of impropriety should be enough for that person to resign and withdraw from the race. But that's obviously not going to happen. So progressives now are faced with a choice, if they want to get rid of Donald Trump, of having to support a guy who has this cloud of allegations surrounding him. So that is a conundrum. If you're like me, if you're a progressive who believes that Donald Trump needs to vacate his current position, absolutely does, and that is absolutely a priority. You know, this stinks. This situation stinks.
And I agree with you. I think it is a very many of us are caught between a rock and a hard place on this issue, and many of us need to be more aware of what we do and say. I think the problem here is, and I have to say this as a person who's done a lot of journalism for, you know, things like Willamette Week or The Oregonian and so on, you need really clear and definitive evidence of such a serious charge. And unfortunately, in this case, there are no witnesses, and the report is now, that is a report of something in 92, is now coming out, when in fact in that period, 92, she did complain about his touching her hair and her shoulders and so on, but nothing about this direct sexual assault. So it's confusing to me in that respect, and I understand that it could simply be her shock, her horror, and her dismay at this person who previously she had a lot of respect for. But I don't know. I can't know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You can't know. this is an incredibly frustrating situation. And not just in the aspects that we've been mentioning, but as a progressive, this gets us back once again to the underlying structural flaws with the Democratic Party that have pushed so many of us away from being registered Democrats. And that is, during this primary campaign, there was ample opportunity to nominate somebody who was not surrounded by a cloud of allegations of sexual misconduct. We could have had a woman. We could have had an absolutely brilliant woman. In fact, we had a choice of several absolutely brilliant women. But those candidates did not manage to garner enough votes. Bernie Sanders did not manage to garner enough votes. And that's incredibly disappointing and leaves us in this conundrum in which we now find ourselves.
Well, I don't think there's anything I can say beyond what both you and I have said. I don't want to appear too defensive, and yet I don't want to seal Biden's doom in an allegation which has certain contradictions. And when very professional journalists, including women, investigated, they could not find any corroboration. I mean, it's just a very bad situation. Should he not be the candidate? Well, in a better world, personally, there were several people who I would have preferred to be the candidate to take on Trump. I don't have that choice. I really don't, and I don't think any of us do.
No, we don't. So this is a dilemma that every progressive voter has to grapple with.
But I'm frightened that people are going to sit on their hands rather than voting because of a flawed candidate, and I think this situation in the White House right now is so dangerous, so clearly fascist, so clearly favoring a wealthy class of individuals, and so clearly against the interests of the American people that most of the candidates of the Democratic Party, and I have to say, including Biden, are necessary, if they are evil, if they're just mediocre, to get rid of the fascist. Because the greatest contradiction in the American political situation today, I am afraid, is the rise of fascism. And it's not just me. Paul Krugman, others have said the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely true. I'm glad you mentioned Krugman, because there's a piece, it's a Krugman's column from last week,
By the way, people should know he's a Nobel Prize winner in economics. It's an important aspect of his career.
It absolutely is, and that he brings that perspective to his columns, which is one of the reasons I find him so edifying. But in his column of April 9th, Krugman digs into the travesty that was the election in Wisconsin last week. Now, we weren't on the air last week, so we weren't able to talk about this.
Are you there? What's happening?
Oh, sorry about that. We just lost the other host. We'll call him back and get him back on the line, okay?
Okay, I'm going to talk until he's back.
Sure.
Is that all right?
All right.
Okay, and I apologize to our listeners. It's beginning to be a very interesting conversation, and it is kind of interrupted by technology issues. And also, I would be interested in hearing other points of view on this earlier topic. We split the topics into two today. And I have to say, I am very frightened of the current president. He behaved, he has done an amazingly evil but clever thing. In order to get in front of the public all the time, he has taken over a role which would traditionally be carried by professionals dealing with the virus, dealing with the threat of a pandemic. Instead, what we have is him pontificating and saying all kinds of things randomly, often defensively, without any consciousness, without any knowledge. And in fact, yesterday, because it got so weird, both CNN, which ran his comments but with a banner underneath it saying this is essentially this is nonsense, and MSNBC, which just simply dropped him away because it was simply an advocacy of him and his trip. This is a very frightening time in American politics. We have had people who I think did very, very bad things. The war in the Far East, for example, all kinds of things. But we've never, ever, ever had a figure that I know of, as a historian and as an observer, who has been as stupid and as self-serving and as defensive and as ambitious as Trump. And I think this is so frightening that we need absolutely to deal with it. And I'm very frightened of anything that disturbs it. And in fact, the most recent thing he said was absurd. He actually went against the First Amendment, the 10th Amendment rights. And it was an appalling exhibit of both ignorance.
We have
Abe
back on the air, by the way.
Okay, I'm back.
We're back.
I'm not sure when you when I dropped out, but I'm back.
Yeah, I don't apologize to our listeners. This is not the most coherent situation that we could have, but I'm hoping there are callers, and I'm hoping that we can have a conversation about either of the issues.
We do have a caller on the line, Robbie.
Okay.
All right, we'll go to the phones. Robbie, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on
the air?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up, I'm not going to be voting for Joe Biden. I think the worst part about it is, that the Democrats just kind of succumb to whoever the DNC picks. I think if people were more adamant, and actually a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters are not endorsing Joe Biden. I think if the Democratic Party had, the courage to stick up to the establishment and say, no, we're not going to appoint a rapist. Do you know what SDK is? And time
I'm sorry?
Up?
I didn't hear it.
I'm sorry. I'll pick up where I left off. Time's Up was the news organization or the Me Too movement that Tara Reid went to in early February. And when she tried bringing up these allegations, they said, oh, there's no evidence. And then, ironically, Joe Biden actually gave that organization close to like $20,000 right after that. And right after that, Anita Dunn became Joe Biden's PR person. You know who Anita Dunn also represented it?
No.
Harvey Weinstein.
Well, wait a minute. Is she a lawyer?
I don't know if she's a lawyer, but she's basically their PR person. She was the person trying to spin Harvey Weinstein as being not bad in early 2017.
Well, that was a pointless act on her part. Again, here we get into an area
why is she working for Joe Biden?
I don't know.
I think it's because Joe Biden has a long list of allegations against him. The New York Times had to take down a whole sentence because they're like, oh, there's no, you know, sexual misconduct besides the inappropriate touching, smelling, you know, coercing women. And they had to, like, take it out just because of how absurd it is. And I think the worst part about this is people who are like, well, we got to get Trump out. That's, like, surface level. What I see going on here is Trump is just kind of, like, awoken the masses to being like, oh, something's wrong politically. I've been paying attention to the politic game, you know, for years. And I was not a fan of Obama. I was an activist with Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, the Dakota Access mm-hmm. Pipeline. And now we're being sold more centerism. And we're being like, oh, well, it's, you know, he may be a rapist. He may be a millionaire. He might be, you know, worth his death. But he's not Donald Trump. And I don't see why, like, that's surface level to me. The same exact thing that the executive party's been doing. Has been doing it for years in the Obama administration, the Bush administration before that, and the Clinton administration. I don't see a difference between Joe Biden and what I've been organizing and fighting against my entire life. I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden.
Well, yeah, you're right. If I could jump in here. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Joe Biden is straight out of that corporate-friendly, left-of-center mold that the Democrats have given us since the Reagan era. You're absolutely correct about that. I disagree with you, though, that Joe Biden is the presumptive nominee now because the DNC wanted him to be. I think the simple fact is, and supporters of Bernie Sanders need to accept this fact, is that more people turned out to vote for Joe Biden than turned out to vote for Bernie Sanders.
See, that's a lie. That's a lie.
It's
rigged.
It is demonstrably true. It is demonstrably true.
Wait, okay, well, I'd love to give you the research paper which shows how they not only modified the exit polls, but they actually, and the exit polls that weren't modified are over 15%, like they're over 4% inaccurate. There are so many inconsistencies.
We don't count estimates.
The voting lines in Texas, they didn't count 44 thumb drives of votes in Texas. They didn't count over 10% of the votes in Texas.
So I have a question for you, caller, and I appreciate your concerns, and I can see that there is certainly a valid argument in what you're making. But are you going to be comfortable not voting and allowing a fascist to continue on for another 4 years? That's okay?
see, here's the thing. Again, it comes down to like, oh, it's all Trump's fault. No, I didn't vote for Obama. I'm actually, after the 8 years, I was happy. I was relieved. I felt like if I would have voted for Obama, I would have felt like I was deceived. I voted for Jill Stein in 2016 because, I wanted to say I think that a third party should be taken more seriously. And also in the whole midst of it, I don't want to be able to say I didn't vote for a woman in the 2016 election because of how politicized it all got. But I'm not going to be voting for Joe Biden. I don't know. I'm either going to be writing in Bernie Sanders or I'll be taking a look at Howie, the third party, because if enough people actually support a Green Party candidate, maybe they'll start taking it more seriously. But the Democrats have lost my trust, not only with actually rigging an election again, but, you know, just with the people that they appoint. They're not listening to the progressives. They give us a little bone or two, and then they're like, all right, now fall in line. And I'm not going to do that because I'm going to be organizing. I can tell already if Joe Biden actually gets it, I'm going to be organizing here in my community against things that he'll be doing. And I find it redundant to support that.
As you absolutely should. Listen, your vote is your own, and you cast it for your own reasons, and that is yours, and nobody can take that away from you. I guess that's really all I can say on that matter. If you're comfortable, and you know, here in Oregon, it's sort of a moot point, right? It doesn't really matter who you vote for here because we're probably not going to swing the electoral calculus one way or another to determine
that's
the
right.
outcome.
But, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
If you cast, you vote the way you need to vote, man. That's you know,
no,
you're living in a democracy.
I think our caller is making an existentially significant point. He's going to vote for the person. if there is such a person, who best fits his beliefs about how the politics of the society should be conducted. I don't want to get into an argument or discussion, by the way, about Jill Stein. I have all kinds of doubts about her, but that's and that element that dominated the Green Party. But that's not really relevant to your point. Your point is, if I may paraphrase it, that Biden is unworthy of our support, even though there is the looming, very serious possibility that Trump will win and that will be a fascist victory. Is that right?
I think this entire nation's been fascist before Donald Trump. But just to finish with my one point here, Joe Biden did give SDK, which was the organization which made Time's Up, close to like $20,000.
Buying silence that way or something like that?
This happened right after Tara Reid went there. Anita Dunn, I mean, and the ironic thing is to me, anybody who thinks, you know, anybody who thinks that Brett Kavanaugh did those horrible things, when you look at Tara Reid's story and a Ford story, it's the same exact, there's no witnesses, but basically it's turned into a partisan thing where Democrats are now just being like, oh, well, Tara Reid's story isn't consistent. And I just think it's hypocritical. And so I'm just going to leave it at that because I don't trust Democrats anymore. I think they stole my vote. I think they keep just trying to appease our progressive base. And then when they do the bait and switch, and I'm just over it. And I think that if more people stood up for what they believed in, maybe they would take us more serious.
Okay.
All right. We're going to leave it there. Thank you for the call, sir.
Have a good day.
I appreciate the position, and I'm not going to argue it further at this time.
I am, though. This is the very heart of the conundrum that that progressives find themselves in year after year after year. And I understand the frustration. You know, I have come around to the position that and Trump has really thrown this into very stark relief for me, that despite the pain, you're going to have to support somebody whom you're not fully committed to, who's not the candidate of your heart, for lack of a better term, because this guy is so manifestly awful. Now the caller said characterized that as, you know, making everything Trump's fault, and I don't think that's where we're coming from. It's not where I'm coming from. I don't think that Donald Trump is the sole cause of the dire straits in which the country finds itself today. No, he is a symptom of an underlying disorder in the body politic that has existed for decades. But at the same time, he is uniquely and manifestly the worst possible person to be sitting in the big chair at this moment. And not just because he has ham-handedly and destructively murdered thousands of Americans with his awful response to a global pandemic. This guy is so bad that it puts progressive voters in a serious bind. Now, Robbie the caller knows which side of the bind he's going to fall out on, and more power to him. I think a lot of other people are going to agonize with this decision for a lot longer, and that decision has to be one that they make on their own terms and for their own reasons.
Well, I just want to say, I understand the argument. I have had extensive experience on the left, going back to being a college student, and it's a long time ago. I have always faced this or similar conundrums. I think there's strategy arguments, possibly on both sides, until suddenly we are faced with a person who really, unlike any other actual Republican or Democratic candidate who is running for president, is truly, by every measure, a fascist, a sexist, a pig, stupid, as well as being stupid and self-serving and absolutely defensive on any issue. And I just don't see the issue beyond that. I can't.
Yeah. And further, I would go on to say that he's guilty of manslaughter, orders of magnitude of manslaughter, and if not manslaughter, then reckless endangerment at the very least.
I don't know which of those I would choose, but the point is, he is largely responsible for a very poorly organized attempt at dealing with the pan virus.
Yeah.
Guys, have another caller that would like to chime in. Mark.
Hang on. Let's have Mark stand by for just a
second.
I want
to add one thing before we go to Mark. Trump is notoriously and obviously corrupt on every level, and I'll shut up about Trump for the time being.
Okay. And just quickly before we bring Mark on, there's something else I need to touch on here. This notion that that Joe Biden is the presumptive nominee because the Democratic National Committee anointed him so, I think it's a true statement that the corporate-friendly centrists who comprise much of the Democratic National Committee would vastly prefer a Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee than a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren. I think that is absolutely true. Now, if you look at the way the primary unfolded, Bernie jumped out to an early lead. And then when things swung Joe Biden's way, they swung in a very big way in South Carolina, where he won overwhelmingly. And then he went on to win overwhelming victories during the Super Tuesday primary. Now, Robbie the caller has insinuated that all of those victories were rigged. He cited Texas specifically, but his implication was that the whole process painted. But I don't know how well that holds up to scrutiny across all of the states that have held their caucuses and primaries so far. Joe Biden piled up an insurmountable lead in delegates. The fact is, however much this rankles progressives, that more voters cast their ballots for Joe Biden than cast their ballots for Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. That is a fact.
I actually have to say something here. It's important. Structurally, the system has always favored the center, and it's a right-wing center at that. We have seen this time and time again. We don't have a good European style moderate left, or even a communist left. This doesn't exist in our culture anymore. It was smashed after World War II. It has never fully recovered. This is a political reality with which we must acknowledge it, and we must deal with it. And it doesn't go away because we are, for one reason or another, sincerely doubtful of the worth of that centrist candidate.
All right, let's go to the caller. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. The Union of Concerned Scientists, I believe it is, has a thing called the Doomsday Clock.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. And they've set it forward, meaning we're closer to the annihilation of the human race than we've ever been before in history since they've had the Doomsday Clock. They had the Doomsday Clock in response to the nuclear threat, the idea of nuclear annihilation. Professor Noam Chomsky has recently said that we are in the most dangerous time in human history. The last good choice that we had for the coming election was Bernie Sanders, if you're a progressive, and I assume everybody that's been on the show is a progressive. We had a good choice, a choice that we could be happy with. Now we have no good choices. We can only do harm reduction. But harm reduction could mean the difference between life on Earth for human beings or not. We are at the abyss. We need to step away from the abyss. Joe Biden has done much, much, much worse than what he was accused of by Tara Reid. He endorsed the war in Iraq. He was the lead Democrat promulgating the war, which has resulted in 1 million people dying. It's horrible. We don't have a good choice, but we have a choice between really something that's muddling along in a very unhappy, very, very disappointing way, which would be Joe Biden, or we have the annihilation of the human race with 4 more years of Trump. And it's a time when we really have to bear that and not be offended by the fact that we have really, really bad choices. Mario Cuomo is not a very nice man. He's a political opportunist, but he's not Trump. Trump is extremely dangerous, and we need to get over ourselves and make sure that he doesn't have another 4 years, because if he does, we're toast.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, it's a maddening choice. It is an absolutely maddening choice. But in my mind, I think it's one that, you know, the right answer is clear.
Well, yeah, and I have to say that also. But the problem I'm seeing here is that people may feel betrayed and angry and disappointed, and particularly that there's no progress on social democratic efforts, of which there are much more now, and therefore literally sit on their hands rather than voting. And the consequence of that, I don't think people can really wrap their heads around, but the consequence of that, aside from the question of possible nuclear annihilation, is truly domestic fascism. And I can't go with that. I can't not go with the lesser evil. And this is very ironic and very sad, but here we are. And that's politics, which is a real world problem.
I agree, and I'm sure that there are many of our listeners who are angry at us for telling them that they need to hold their nose and eat this big bowl of garbage that's placed before them. That is, and as I said just a moment ago, an absolutely maddening choice. But as the caller put it in very stark terms, we're looking at an unsatisfactory choice on the one hand and the possible annihilation of human civilization on the other. I don't know that I would put it quite so starkly, but that certainly outlines the dilemma that we're in.
Well, and I'm not concerned so much with the potential annihilation. That's been a danger for a long, long time. I am concerned with the fact that this guy, and this is really important, doesn't know how democracy should operate, doesn't understand the Constitution or care about it, doesn't have any moral qualms. He is really, truly, and this is the first time I've ever said this, because I've disagreed with a lot of Republican candidates, a lot of Republican and Democratic presidents, but this guy has no morality except personal service.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I mean, he's... His son-in-law has been leading the procurement efforts for personal protective equipment for frontline healthcare workers. His you can hear me sputtering over here because it's just so hard for me to get my brain around. In what universe is Jared Kushner an acceptable occupant of that position? Why is Ivanka Trump on the panel of experts that is now investigating ways to reopen the United States economy? What sort of bizarro world are we living in here now? I mean, I suppose Hillary's emails were so bad that we really had no other choice but to elect Donald Trump. But clearly...
No, that's...
Clearly, we need to jettison this guy. The sooner, the better. And when I look back, as we're sitting here in the midst of a global viral outbreak, and we had the opportunity this last fall to remove this dude from office, we had the opportunity, and it was not taken. We're seeing, even in that short period of time, the kind of destruction that this dude can offer us. The number of Americans dead because of his mismanagement is going to be measured in the tens of thousands before this is all done.
No, and I concur.
I don't know if I... Go ahead, Joe.
No, I concur. I mean, it's just... It's a terrible situation, but I want to emphasize this. We have to understand that the United States of America has had bad politics vis-a-vis left and right ever since Roosevelt, really and truly. And where we've had some good things happening, for example, Lyndon Johnson on civil rights, we also had the insane, stupid war in Vietnam. So we really are not making choices among are what most of us would hope for in the way of leadership. And we have to live with that. We have to live with that because we haven't got a viable alternative to that. American politics has been structured for a long, long time in terms of these two, well, since the Civil War, in terms of these two parties, neither of which adequately expresses the desires and interests, I believe, of the American people.
Yes. And if you step back a little bit and you look wider than the figure of Donald Trump himself, if you look at the Republican Party, however dysfunctional and dissatisfying for progressives the Democratic Party must or is, they are Bush League next to the Republican Party. We've seen, and the election last week in Wisconsin is proof of this, that Republicans are willing to sacrifice the lives of their own voters in order to maintain and expand their grip on political power. just live with that sentence for a little bit, if you would, listeners. The Republicans are willing to sacrifice the lives of their voters in order to maintain and expand their grip on political power.
And
that is
add,
but one example. Go ahead.
I just want to add one point. We have never had a good national electoral process. The Electoral College was designed specifically to limit the power of the people. And now it has put us in a situation with Trump. But beyond that, there is no logical reason why we could not have a national system of vote by mail. No reason at all. Oregon does it. Other states do it. It's a good answer to these to several of these problems, including a lot of voter fraud. And what Trump said about that was that vote by mail would mean the Democrats would win, so he's against it. That was what
said. Yeah. If democracy doesn't work for you, they're saying, well, we're just going to make democracy not work. We are not going to alter our ethos. We are not going to modify our platform. We're not going to change our worldview in any way to make ourselves more palatable to the electorate. We are instead going to foreclose the mechanisms of democracy so that only the right sort of people will cast votes. That is absolutely toxic. That is absolutely caustic to the body politic and to our process, such as it is. Now, I know many of you probably are tempted to call up right now and give me counterexamples from the left. And I got to tell you, they're simply not there. The Democratic Party is not trying to keep people from voting. The Democratic Party is trying to expand access to voting. And again, before you call me up and tell me I'm a huge fan of the Democrats, I am not a huge fan of the Democrats. But I'm saying to you, there is one major American political party that believes in democracy and the process, and one that does not. That is what I'm saying. Do we have a caller on the line?
Yes, Harry's on the line.
Harry, good morning.
Greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. The first caller mentioned about how he didn't like Biden and preferred Bernie, but he has to also remember, you did put it how Bernie swept all these states. You have to also understand that 2.5 million Democratic voters decided they wanted Biden and not Sanders. So you have to go with that. I mean, that's why he dropped out. There's just no possibility of him winning, even though he still can, during some elections, he can get both votes and go to the convention and maybe broker a something there. But the odds are probably not. So, but, you know.
Well, he decided not to do that.
Huh?
He decided not to do that for strategic reasons.
Yes, that's true. And that was very smart of him to do that. And he has to understand that since Sanders is now, you know, he will support a Biden for the move to win. But the issue is another issue is I had against Bernie Sanders that most progressives didn't pick up when he mentioned there's no room for people who are anti-abortion in the Democratic Party. But there's a lot of Democrats that are against abortion. And to bring up abortion is the way to split the women's vote, and that's what's going to happen. That's why there's a possibility of a Trump winning again.
You know, and I want to make another point unrelated to what you're saying, but very important. Right now,
well, wait, I have a point related to what he's saying. So hang on a second. I say abortion also splits the male vote at least as much as it splits the, probably more so than it splits the woman vote. Okay, go ahead, Joe.
Well, I want to move away from that particular point, which is a valid point. But I am very proud of the work Sanders is doing in the Senate. He really is a very powerful figure right now in the struggles in the Senate, and one of the most pure fighters we have. There are not a lot of, I would use the term pure, you know, kind of advisedly, but he's really working hard. One of his strategies, one of his decisions is, I can make a difference in the Senate now. I cannot get to be president given the situation. That's
yes.
All.
And I look, and I that's a positive point of Sanders. But the abortion issue example, during this pandemic, and most progressives didn't report that there were some states that were, they were supposed to shut down abortion clinics as elective procedure.
Texas, and, notably, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, but there was a few of them in Ohio and a few, and were still doing abortions. And the states tried to shut them down. It went through the Supreme Court, and so far they had to shut down in all these states that they had to shut down. The idea that they did this, and, but of course the regular media didn't bring this up at all, you know, but which could, I think, might hurt Democratic chances.
Is that it?
That's it. One last thing, Joe. Could you use the word conservative fascism? I think that because that's who was causing all this, is conservative fascism from the right.
Well, I could use it. It would be okay. I just out front want to identify it with traditional fascism of Mussolini and Hitler and the current government in Hungary and very many other places. So I don't feel the need to be redundant.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. We have a comment on the Facebook page from John. He writes, as much as I would love to see a vote for rather than being a vote against, but I have to say that to have progressives to rise to the desire for some more progressive third party every 4 years are missing the mark. Before the right took control of the White House, they took school boards, city and city councils, state legislatures and governorships, etc. It's that lack of political awareness that leaves us with the choice we seem to be consistently served. To quote Douglas Adams, anyone who is capable of getting themselves made president should on no account be allowed to do the job. That's true. If you want to be president of the United States, that's evidence of your basic insanity right there, I think. But
well,
the point
that's
he makes,
pretty cynical, but okay.
I know, but it's also humorous. The point he's making that it's not enough for progressives every 4 years to call out for a third party candidate. And we have made this point on this show many, many, many times. If there is to be a viable third party in this country, it needs to be built from the grassroots up. It's not enough every 4 years to say vote for Jill Stein or vote for Ralph Nader. It's not enough.
So are we taking a deep breath here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is an awkward and difficult conversation for progressives to have, but it's one that we absolutely have to have. I'm not going to tell anybody. Well, I'm going to take that back. I am going to suggest how you should vote, or at least what you should take into consideration, but I'm not going to judge anybody who votes in the way they feel they need to. That is everyone's absolute right. And there, you know, no one can take that from you.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think there's going to be a lot of game playing in this campaign, which we also saw, by the way, in the previous campaign. The Russian government is involved. Many other interest groups are involved. It is not a pure, in any sense, legitimate way to do democracy. We don't have a choice in that aspect of it. We don't have the power. We don't have the machinery. We don't have a party that is really viable in every state. We are in no position to do with that. And we really are looking at an oppressive, ugly, vicious system, which will, if it is allowed another 4 years, destroy women's reproductive rights, destroy the rights of persons of color, destroy the rights of women, and so on. That's what Trump is. That's what he's about. And to deny that is to deny reality, as far as I'm concerned.
Certainly. You can add the environment to the list.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mean to forget the environment. Yeah. This guy is an idiot on environmental issues.
Yeah, so I guess that's it. Progressives, you know, I empathize. This is a very difficult decision, and you got to make it based on whatever values you hold most dear. And, you know, I trust that all of you will do that.
Well, I don't, I'm not a liberal like you, I have to say.
You're not a liberal like me?
No, I don't. I mean, yes, anyone has the right to vote any way they want, obviously. And yes, there are reasons that one could argue for a purer, better politics. And that happens every 4 years and almost routinely. I have to, you know, I have to constantly point out what happens when Nader got to a position where the whole election would be resolved in Florida, and Florida was manipulated by screaming, yelling people, including a guy who's now on the Supreme Court. It threw the whole system into the hands of the Republicans. And we are really, really in dire straits right now. I don't know about nuclear destruction. I do know about environmental destruction. There's no question that this president, if left to his own devices, will take every pretty landscape, every healthy aspect of our environment, and render it useless and only good for the oil industry and for other opportunists. And I just can't live with that.
Finding it hard to argue with you.
Pardon me?
I said I'm finding it hard to argue with you, which is saying something, because usually I enjoy arguing with you, and it doesn't take a whole lot.
You know, I hope people appreciate we're doing this show on the telephone, and it's really awkward. Both of us, when we're together, can look at each other's faces, can write a note to one to the other, can think a little bit. We're now doing it on telephone. Telephone is very unsatisfactory communication. I'm glad we have it. I feel very privileged to be able to be on the air. I'm glad we're on the air in this way. It's better than nothing, but it is better than nothing.
Yeah, I suppose that's the case, yeah. I agree. We're lucky to be able to do this show in the first place, even luckier to be able to do it now in the midst of perhaps the most adverse circumstances that any of us have faced in our lives. You know, and I'm grateful for our callers that hold us to account for what we say. This is how I think we begin to create a better politics.
I agree with that. I think it's good when people...
Guys, we're going to have to wrap it up here and in a little bit.
Yeah. I agree.
All right, I think we're at the end.
I think we're at the end. Yep. And I'm glad when people call us to account. I think it's a good idea. It keeps us honest. So, you know,
yeah.
I hope next week we can get into something else. I don't know what it'll be, because I don't know what craziness will happen. Anyway.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're not done with this particular conversation yet. But yes.
No, probably not.
Let's move along.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of our callers today.
I want to thank KBOO for making this awkward situation possible, and I want to comment on how creative the station is. This is the best possible way to continue on when we can't be in our studios.
That's right. All right.